I find, as I've been thinking about this, that these two profoundly disruptive issues have been stacked on one another. The first one, I would say, was an impersonal issue that has become personal. It's this virus that threatens our health and our economy. And it's interesting that it's become what was impersonal at the beginning seems to have become very personal. People have lost jobs. People are on furlough. People are struggling. People are fighting over whether we should wear masks or not and making it this giant issue, one way or the other. And I find it so interesting that this thing that was impersonal has become very personal. The other thing that's been stacked on top of it, obviously, is one personal issue, incredibly, profoundly personal, that risks becoming impersonal. I think this problem that we have, or what I call a festering wound that threatens the very fabric of our country, this issue of racism, but all the complicated issues that are surrounding it and swirling all around it have unfortunately run the risk of becoming very impersonal. We lose what is so desperately important in the midst of it. So I just find this interesting. Why would God allow this? If we take the reality of our circumstances and embrace them and engage them, why is God allowing this? It's not a surprise to him. He's not shocked. He has allowed this for some reason, and we'll talk more about that in a minute, but I find it very interesting. I don't know about you, but it's challenging every day to navigate these issues. And they seem to not necessarily overlap, but they feel like they've been stacked on top of one another. And I know we're all dealing with it. I find it very interesting, challenging, unique, whatever. You guys, I've written a few things. This will be kind of where I think this passage is going today. I'd like to read this to you. I know you can read, but I spent a lot of time trying to craft this, so I want you to hear it. Let me read this first paragraph. Most difficult and important issues are fairly simple, but rarely, if ever, simplistic. I don't think all the things that we're dealing with are all that complicated in some ways, but if we approach that very simplistically, I think we miss it. I think the complexity of these issues, both the personal and the impersonal portions of it, the complexity of these issues must be understood in order to gain the clarity that leads to productive resolution. Going on, I'd like to say this. We need to have the inclination and the ability to seriously consider the merits of the various facets of these difficult issues, even when they threaten to diminish our own preferred personal perspective. We're going to have to really be people who think well, who think broadly, who think effectively about these issues. Even the COVID thing. We have to be, I think, more broadly thinking than just having our own personal perspective. Let me go on and say, if we fail to gain a broad and balanced understanding of any given issue, we guarantee not only an inadequate and ineffective resolution, but also the alienation of those who see the value of truths embedded in the opposing and unpopular views. There are truths embedded in what other people have to say and think. Doesn't mean everything that they say or everything that we say and think is absolutely true. But there are truths embedded there. And being able to understand them and embrace them and respect them and listen to them is really incredibly important. Therefore, it is essential that we define the non-negotiable truths that frame the issues as to scope and perspective and importance. Therefore, it is essential that we define the non-negotiable truths. What are you not willing to change? What is not negotiable? It's absolute. We have to understand those so we can frame the issues as to their scope and importance. So, therefore, at the end here, My responsibility, and I mean this powerfully, my responsibility. So I've been struggling with what's my responsibility in this role that I play at Quest. What is my responsibility to this? And I have felt tremendous pressure from just society, from things, but also from comments that people make to me, email me, text me. Tremendous pressure to take sides. And it's not that I don't want to have an opinion or have a conviction. I do. And I already have some. But I have felt that real expectation from people to take a side and pronounce that and push that and really put it on you. And so, but my responsibility, and I'll expand that, your responsibility in all of this is to help discover, embrace, and live out. Some people, I think they really think that churches are continuing their thing. They're just continuing their game. They're just kind of doing church. You know, they couldn't wait to get back to church and just do whatever church was before. I don't know about you, but this whole situation for me has been a stripping away of so many things about church. We don't get to do music like we used to do it. We don't get to, you know, there's just a lot of stuff. It doesn't feel like it used to feel, does it? It's just so different. But I think my responsibility, and I think your responsibility, is to help discover and embrace and live out. You see, I think the Lord, if one thing he's doing is he is kind of refining us down to some core things. Some things that are non-negotiable in life. So do we have to have music to do worship? We don't. Do we have to, you know, have all this or that or whatever? We don't. It kind of stripping us down. Even I feel it in my own personal life, that it's stripped down to some more basics. It's just kind of like me and the Lord. Me and the most important people, you know, that live in my bubble. My wife, my kids, my grandkids, some key other people in my neighborhood. People in our church, it's just kind of saying, okay, wait a second. I need to discover and embrace, and I need to live out. And here's what I need to live out, the biblical non-negotiable truths. What is it that I can't get away from? What do I have to do? And why do I do that? So that, let's just say, so that God can paint a portrait on the canvas of our lives and our community. God is still wanting to paint a portrait in me, in the canvas of my life, in the canvas of my community, that reveals and boldly proclaims something. And here's what I think he wants us to reveal and boldly proclaim is this: the glory and the beauty of God's blueprint for what life is supposed to be like. We have not been paralyzed from doing that. For us to live out the glory and the beauty of what he designed. Because what he designed is sacred. I think in this whole situation, we have lost the sacredness of life. The sacredness of the qualities of life. And we've been so caught up in all of the hoopla. In the craziness and the confusion, have we lost the sacredness of life? The sacredness of the soul, the human soul, the human heart. I wonder if he says, no, you guys, I want to paint that portrait in your life and in your community. And I want to reveal it, and I want to boldly proclaim the beauty and the glory of God's blueprint for life. Wow. And so you think, well, what is it that what is that blueprint? What is his will? What is his desire? And I think we've talked a little bit about before the three dimensions of God's will. One was there was God's perfect will. And his perfect will was designed in Genesis 1 and 2, and life was perfect as Adam and Eve walked in the garden with absolute intimacy with God himself and with each other. It couldn't have been any better. It was awesome. And then they were tempted and they decided to live life on their own values, on their own. They took over. They wanted to know if they could be God, if they could experience the issues of good and evil for themselves experientially. And it ruined everything. And so there's this thing we call permissive will. That God has permitted. He's given us free will to do what we choose. And he permits it. It doesn't mean he agrees with everything, and certainly he doesn't. But he permits it. But the reality is, there is also an ultimate will that he is working out. He will work all things together for good for those who love him and are called according to his purpose. He is working out human history. And he will not be the loser in that. He will be the benevolent winner in that, the lover of mankind. Wow. But right now, today, let's circle it. We live in the permissive will of God. He has permitted these things to happen in our world. There's the macro issues, right? Of course. Whether we want to talk about COVID or we want to talk about the social unrest, or we talk about what he's permitted in your own life during this. Because I don't know if you noticed, but life continued, right? There's all sorts of stuff that continued to happen in the midst of all of this. In our personal lives, Diane's mom passed away. That was hard. A couple of weeks ago, Diane had a fight with the sidewalk and she was walking our daughter's dog, and the dog pulled her over, and the sidewalk won and crushed her finger. It had to be surgically put back together. Okay, it's a long ways in the heart, but it hasn't been fun. Life continues to happen, doesn't it? And we could go around the room and talk about all the things that life has happened. And there have not been a lot of fun, some of those. And a lot of the fun stuff seems to have been taken away. We don't get to be together as much and have as many parties or whatever it might be. The fun stuff happened. My daughter's pregnant. You know how cool? The sacredness of life. And we're going to find out the gender here in a few days. That'll be interesting. This whole gender reveal thing is quite an experience, right? And so there's this permissive will of God. And I think the things why he permits this is this. There's five elements, I think, to God's sovereignty and providentialness, and the purposes for all these tragedies and calamities in his permissive will. Just real quickly. For one, he allows the natural consequences of man's rebellion against God to have its effect. He says, if you want to treat each other with disrespect and dishonor, if you want to, I'll let you, but there will be consequences for such things. And he allows it to happen. Secondly, he sometimes executes specific divine judgment on people, on groups. That's part of what he does. Third, he wants to get our attention in light of the imminent coming of Christ. He wants to get our attention. He is coming back. Someday that day is going to happen. And he wants us to know. And he is going to get our attention for that. Fourth, we want to awaken our personal need for an intimate relationship with God. Probably that's one of the things I think in this whole process that has stripped us down to the need to know God personally. The human heart, right? If we could change the human heart tomorrow, so much of this would go away immediately. And yet we try to keep finding solutions in everything else. The need for the human heart to be changed. Fifth, to call God's people to perform courageous acts of love in the midst of danger and profound need. He is calling us to step forward now to courageous acts of love, whatever that might look like. And I think at the end here, we have to know who is the real opposition. One of my concerns in our culture today, in our country, is the enemy. We have identified the enemy and we are attacking one another. There seems to be this incredibly conflictual situation that people are attacking each other. And as Christians, I think we can get sucked into that. Today I'd like to talk a little bit about who the real enemy is. And I'd like to name that person. I'd like to name them. So let's go to Ephesians chapter 6. verses 10 through 20. Let's just start with the very first word. It says finally. So he's going to wrap up the letter here that he's writing to the Ephesians. And he's talked about their importance of their unity. He's talked about the importance of relationships. He's talked about the importance of being filled with the Spirit. And so he's talked about how to translate into the relationship between a husband and a wife, between parents and their kids, between employers and employees. And then he gets to this and he says, finally. And now let's read this section. Be strong in the Lord and in the strength of his might. Finally, in the midst of this, you're going to have to be strong in the Lord. He is the source of your strength. He is the one who will give you what you need to make it through these difficult things. Be strong in the Lord and the strength of his might. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand. Box it. Put it up. This is the big word in this whole thing. He wants you to be able to stand and to stand well. Now, I brought up our Roman soldier today. This is probably what Paul was seeing as he wrote this from prison. That he's writing this, and he's looking at the soldier who's guarding him. And he says, I want you to be able to stand firm. You see, the key thing about a Roman soldier was not his sword and not his shield and not all these other things. It was the ability to stand. They taught them to stand and to stand firm. They together as a team stood. So they were in a group, a troop, if you will, and they stood firm together. They were a team. They had to learn how to stand. And here it says, put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the schemes of the real opponent. It is the devil himself. Now, I'm not the kind of guy that sees Satan behind every bush and everything. But there is a deceiver and a liar who is trying to stir up trouble. And behind these issues, I think, is Satan himself. Now look at this in verse 12, and this is kind of the core of it. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood. That is actually not the real enemy. It gets lived out, yes, whether it be in our homes or in our neighborhoods or in our community or in our country or in our world. It looks like flesh and blood, but it's actually not. That is not the one that we wrestle against. Now, in the Greek, it's interesting here. It's actually, we do not wrestle against blood and flesh. And he put it there because he's talking about the literal flesh and blood of seeing the people around us. The Ephesians would have said, if you put flesh first, like we do, they would have said, oh, you're talking about that fleshy spiritual part. He said, no, our enemy is not an earthly enemy. That's not the opponent. Now, when we turn these issues into the opponent being people, we buy into the problem. We buy into a disaster. The enemy is not actually people. Even those who take sides that we disagree with, they are actually not the enemy. We do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but, and this is kind of a unified statement here, we wrestle against rulers. And you think, well, does that mean governmental rulers? No. He just said we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against rulers, against authorities. Look at this, he begins to expand on that. Against the cosmic powers over this present darkness. The cosmos krates. The cosmic powers. You start to think, well, wait a second, is there something beyond just this world? He's saying, yes. There's something in the heavenlies. Look at this. Let's highlight it. Against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly places. That's who we wrestle with. You guys, somewhere embedded in and behind even this disease is something bigger behind the scenes. Clearly, in this issue of the division and the conflict between people, there is a spiritual force of evil that exists in the reality that is wanting to produce hatred and racism and division and confusion. He's trying to do that. He is the enemy. People are not the enemy. Your wife is not the enemy. Your husband is not the enemy. Sometimes they look like it. Sometimes they act like it. You know, the kids are not the enemy. Your neighbor is not your enemy. Cross-racially is not the enemy. It is someone who is trying to stir up trouble. He is a liar and a deceiver and a murderer and a hater at every level. And he has been trying to create that division from day one. It's what he did with Adam and Eve. It's what he did with Cain and Abel. We're just living it out in new ways all the time. They are not the enemy. These spiritual forces of evil are the enemy. Right? So let's go on. Look at verse 13. Therefore, take up the whole armor of God that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand firm. This is what he wants us to do. Put on this suit. Someone asked me if this was my hazmat suit from the first century. But this is what he wants. In effect, it is. But here's what I want to do. Go to verse 14. He says, therefore, stand. This is the verb. It's an imperative. It's command. Stand, and not only stand, but stand therefore, having done this. Having fastened on the belt of truth. It's where they kind of attached all of their equipment, was this belt. And it was the issue of truth. Truth matters. It is the lost gem of our culture to live in truth. There is truth. And the most important is the absolute truth of who God is. That he is real, that he is infinite, that he is personal, that he is sovereign and he is providential, that he is working out his plan, their truth. Have it fastened to the belt of truth, and having put on the breastplate of righteousness, that we need to live out the reality of who he is. And it will cover the key organs of your body, of your spiritual life. The breastplate of righteousness. And as shoes for your feet, we don't have any shoes on this guy, but as shoes for your feet, having put on the readiness given by the gospel of peace. You guys, what do we have to take to the world? What we have to give is the gospel of peace. It's what Christ wanted to create. It's what he created for you and for me, between us and God. And as a result of that, he wants us to create peace between us and other people, in our homes, in our neighborhoods, in our community, in this country, in this world. The gospel of peace. You guys, we have a message that answers the deepest need of the human heart. And we will never have peace until we have him. Verse 16. In all circumstances. Usually I just kind of go right over this piece. But I thought this week, oh my gosh, look at this. In all circumstances, this weird stacked circumstances of COVID and civil unrest, in all circumstances, take up the shield of faith with which you can extinguish all the flaming darts of the evil one, the one who's trying to get you. He's throwing darts at you all the time. And say, I have a God who is trustworthy. I trust him. I'm putting my faith in him, rather than in the things of this world. And take on the helmet of salvation, because it covers the most vital part of your body, your brain, that you have been transferred into the kingdom of light from the kingdom of darkness. Wow. And the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God, praying at all times in the Spirit with all prayer and supplication. God's word and to pray are critical things for us to be doing. Now, let me wrap this up here. Look at this. In the second part of verse 18, it says, to that end. To that end. It seems to me that this whole section then is going to be the so, the therefore, the what now. He's been talking about the importance of fighting the battle and knowing that the enemy is no one on earth. It is a spiritual reality. And because of that, To that end, so therefore, what now? We have to bring down what has been said before, so this little arrow will represent that. Let me just say, to that end, what we've been talking about, of being Spirit-filled, filled with His Spirit, letting Him control and empower and direct who we are, of standing firm, of being fully armed, of praying, because He just talked about praying, right? To that end, He says this, keep alert with all perseverance. You guys, this keep alert, it means don't fall asleep. Don't fall asleep at the wheel. You guys, each one of us live in a world that's been turned upside down and inside out. And He's saying, do not fall asleep. Be aware, be intelligent, be thoughtful, engage the issue, understand what's going on. Don't just go to the first level, but the second, the third, and the fourth. Understand what's happening. Because it is not a simplistic issue. For me, it came to roost in a very simple way. I was in Home Depot last week, and as I was standing in line, the cash register, the computer, it went down. And they were trying to fix it. So there were a bunch of us standing in line, and it was eventually people began to bunch up, and there were four of us standing together. And in the process of the conversation, I shared that my son-in-law is a policeman and that I serve as a chaplain for the St. Louis County Police Department. And so one of the guys said to me, with a tone in his voice, he said, so you're for the police? Now, it's a simple question, right? And it's a simple answer. It looked like it needed a simple answer, but the reality was he was not asking a simple question. He was asking a complicated question. And I said, well, let me ask, what are you asking me? Are you asking me, am I for those police who are abusive, who go beyond their authority, who do what they ought not to do? Are you asking me that? Or are you asking me, am I for the vast majority of policemen who are men and women of integrity and of sacrifice? Which one are you asking me? And he didn't answer, because he was trying to trap me. You see, think deeply about what the issues are. What are people really asking, and what are they really saying? You have to think it through. Don't be fall asleep. Keep alert. Persevere. Work through it. Think deeply. Understand the issues at every level. But not only that, keep alert with all perseverance, making supplication for all the saints. Supplication is not a word we use very often, but meaning asking on their behalf. Making supplication for everyone. Praying for each other. Asking the Lord to provide for each other. He wants you to supplicate. It's legal. It's okay to do that. Making prayers for all the saints. And then he says this, and also for me. He says, do it for me. And now with the priesthood of all believers, that's all of us, we need to pray for each other. And look what he asked them to pray for. Look at this in verse 19. And also for me, that the words may be given to me in opening my mouth boldly to proclaim the mystery of the gospel. He says, I want you to pray that the Lord would give me the words at the right time, in the right place, in the right way, for the right person. Give me the words, Lord. Pray that the Lord would give me words, that I would open my mouth boldly to proclaim the mystery of the gospel. Yes, I wonder, in the midst of all this social upheaval, I'm old enough to have gone through the 60s and the 70s when there was incredible upheaval in our country. Riots, protests against Vietnam, and all the things that came with that. The drug culture started. There was the hippie movement. There was this and that. But in the midst of that, there was this thing called the Jesus People movement. An incredible explosion of the gospel. And it was kind of a mix of evangelicalism and Pentecostalism. And it was this really amazing time. But Jesus was an issue. And people were talking about it. And it was this incredible time of evangelism. And a lot of the church leaders today are a result of that movement. And there was a boldness of evangelism to proclaim the mystery of the gospel. The mystery of how amazing it would be that God would visit earth in the person of Christ, and he would be a human being, and he would then die for you and for me. And he rose from the dead, and he's coming back. You guys, the world needs hope. They need an answer that doesn't create hate and division. It doesn't make each other the enemy, because guess who the enemy is? It is not each other. It is the evil forces in a world in which we live, and there's a battle going on. So you need to put on your suit of armor. And we would pray for each other that the words would be given to us in the opening of our mouths to boldly proclaim the mystery of the gospel. And look at this, for which I am an ambassador in chains. As Paul sat there and watched this Roman soldier, he also sat there chained as a prisoner. But they hadn't chained really his heart. He was still proclaiming the gospel. He even proclaimed it to these guys who were by him. And there was a whole movement of people coming to Christ inside the Praetorian Guard, is what they called them. All of a sudden he says, you're chained to me? Well, I'm chained to you. And guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to talk to you about Christ. And all of a sudden there were guys who were coming to Jesus. And it began to change the whole Roman Praetorian Guard. There was a movement of evangelism among the soldiers. Is that incredible? Guess what? We can do the same. For he is an ambassador in chains, that I may declare it boldly as I ought to speak. Wow. You guys, we live in a time of tremendous need in our culture. Tremendous conflict. And you and I have a very beautiful message that is a mystery of the gospel. And I pray, and let's pray for each other, that he would give us the words so that when we're giving an opening, that we would take it. That we would stay alert. Don't fall asleep at the wheel. Understand the issues. Engage it. Educate yourself. Look at the issues. Understand them. Be able to simplify them down to its core issues. And address it with the gospel. Because we are not each other's enemy. We're an army together. It's an army of love. It is not an army of hate. So let me wrap up. Just reiterate. It is our responsibility. You guys, this is our responsibility. To do this. He's given it to us. And the question is, are you willing to pick it up and take it? It is our responsibility to discover, to embrace, and to live out. You guys, this is a call to action, right? In the midst of this cultural issue, we need to take action. We need to live out biblical, non-negotiable truth. You guys, one of those is this. Christianity and racism cannot coexist. It's crazy. It is God's creation of the different ethnicities in our world that make up the human race. God thought it up. For us to demean it means that we reject the sovereignty and the sacredness of God. There is no room for racism in Christianity. And we do this for this reason, so that God can paint on the canvas of our lives and of our community. You guys, he wants to paint a new picture, a better one. He's continuing to paint this. He wants to do it in our lives that will reveal and boldly proclaims the glory and the beauty of God's blueprint in what life is supposed to be like. That's what he wants to do. It seems to me that he's taking us and he's stripping it down. He's simplifying things. And he says, you guys, in a world that needs hope, you have the message. And you might say, well, I'm afraid to do that. We'll pray that each of us have boldness. You don't have to be obnoxious or brazen. That's never going to work. But bold to say, my hope is in Christ, and he moves me to non-negotiables, and I choose in obedience to him to not hate, but to love. I choose to understand what's going on. I'm not going to be trapped by the craftiness of people. I'm going to stand for what is right. You guys, it's quite a challenge. I don't know exactly how the Christian church is going to do in coming days. But he needs to move us to be the primary movers in this culture rather than shrinking away. He says, do not fall asleep. Persevere. Hang in there. Move forward. Pray for one another and pray that we will boldly pronounce the gospel. Because it's the only answer that's going to help. It's the only thing that can change the human heart. Nothing else has worked. I'd like to wrap up this morning with just a short story. My dad was the vice principal of a high school in my hometown that was the most integrated of all the schools. My dad really cared about these issues. He was he started the Human Rights Commission in my hometown. He cared about his players and his students in a really deep way. He didn't really love it that I went on staff with Campus Crusade. That wasn't his idea of cool when you had to go out and ask people to support you. He wasn't real hip on that whole thing, and so he wasn't real behind it. But eventually, he and my mom began to visit us, and there was a time where my mom and dad came to visit Diane and I in Los Angeles. And in the ministry of Campus Crusade on the campus at USC, we had several African-American students involved, and one was a guy named Kevin, oddly enough. And Kevin was just the coolest guy. I just loved him. And so when my dad came to campus one day with me, I introduced him to Kevin, and they spent some time together. I didn't know what they talked about. I didn't know how it really went. But later, my dad said to me, he said, Kevin, I spent 40 years trying to address and solve this issue of racial division. And it never worked, but it's working with what you're doing here. And it blew me away. I love my dad. I respected him deeply. And the things that he did, I thought were incredible. But he never saw what he did to change the human heart until he saw what we were doing and what was going on in Kevin's life. And he said, you are accomplishing what I tried my whole life. And it wasn't us. It was the gospel. It was the reality of Christ. It was changing things. And I think we're in the same position again today. The reality of the power of Christ in people's lives will change the human heart. And it's what we've been commissioned to do. But in order to do it, we're going to have to put on the armor of God. We're going to have to live it out. So let's not fall asleep. Let's persevere. And let's pray for one another.